North Derbyshire Radio, good evening, greetings, welcome, thank you for joining me tonight. Now, from Salford in the UK, W.F. Logan, William Logan, spent formative years living in the Shetland Islands. The topography inspired a passion for geology that years later, William pursued while at Cambridge University studying computer science. Now, William's an author. The Gothengau Colony is an alternate history novel set in 1965 in a Nazi-controlled Europe. Britain turned its back on France and remained neutral, if not friendly, to the Third Reich. The Soviet Union has been obliterated, Europe's Jews almost all murdered, and Germany dominates the space race. It's told from the points of view of three German-Americans, Conrad, Petra and Karl, who migrated from the US to the Fatherland on the same ship almost 20 years earlier. It's a stark contrast between his Amish upbringing and the murderous regime of the Third Reich, and it creates tension for Conrad, who is caught between two worlds. It's such an interesting take on history. It showcases Bill's knowledge of the subject brilliantly. We also chat about the Bridges of Königsberg problem, how we might start a podcast together, and why being on Twitter is a bit like playing rugby. It's a fantastic chinwag. It really is. Let's welcome W.F. Logan in for a Friday night chat.
How are you doing today anyway? Are you all right?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, now I'm in the studio and I'm settled. I'll readjust and I'm fine. How are you? Are you good?
Yeah, pretty good. You know, it's a nice day down here and all that kind of thing. It's a nice day up there. You know, I'm familiar with Derbyshire because you've read me by on from Salford. So, you know, living in a tower block in Salford, you can see Derbyshire.
Yeah.
It's usually got snow on it.
Yes, that's true. Whereabouts are you at the moment then?
I'm in Putney in London.
All right.
Yeah, just in Southwest 15. It's a really nice area. I really like it around here, actually. I've been living here since I moved back to Britain a few years ago. I think maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I moved back to England. And I've been living in Putney since then. This is like the third address I've been living in. Because you have to, like, even if you're renting, you have to move up the housing ladder in London because some of the places that you're in are absolutely terrible.
Yeah,
dirty. They've never been cleaned. They've never been painted. A landlord who thinks they're doing you a favour. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't seem to know the old adage, the customer is always right. And I pay my rent on time. I want things done.
That's how it should be.
It is. It's how it should be. I don't want any other playing around with it. And it's like, you know, the rent is not cheap around here. It's not cheap at all. You know, it's ridiculous amounts of money. But, you know, it's just money. It's just numbers. As long as you're healthy and you've got something to eat and there's a roof over your head, you're all right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming out. I know we had a bit of kind of toing and froing to get things arranged. And
I can't read when I first got up in the morning. I can barely see.
Same. So, yeah, I was up at 5:15 today and I finished the show and then I got back on, we'd been off, I got back on the sofa and the next thing I knew it's like 9:15 and I just completely zonked back out. You can tell it's Friday. Five days a week at that start time is, I always feel it come Friday and the weekend, definitely.
Oh yeah, but you know, there's no milk deliveries anymore, are they? So you can't really have that hardcore milk delivery. You got up at 3 in the morning and you finish at 9. That's pretty, you know, there's bakers. I don't know if they even have bakers these days, do they? I mean, France only did that a few years ago. You know, in the 19th century, up until the First World War, they didn't really have many butchers and bakers in London. They just brought them in from Germany.
Is that right? Yeah.
And then, you know, the First World War happened and, you know, I suppose that for about 30 or 40 years, we had to supply our own butchers and bakers. And now it's back to the old ways.
We love sharing stuff like this as well. I do personally. I think it's the main reason why I do the radio stuff. A lot of people think it's kind of and I suppose some do it for ego and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't. I just like to share good stuff. That's why I do it. I know what you mean.
I mean, I just wrote this really to entertain people. It's just a bit of fun, you know. There's like alternate history. I don't think there is any such thing as alternate history. There is what there is. You can't go back and change it. And as far as history is concerned, I think that you're watching a film You might, you know, if you can travel through time, you might be able to rewind and fast forward, but you're just watching.
Yeah.
You can't do anything. Not changing it. Oh, this is just, you know, and and I take it as just really a bit of fun, a bit of entertainment. And, you know, people like to think, oh, what if? And then you can get something, you can put something good together. And I didn't really see in the Gothengau colony, I'm really focusing on how it could have been a different way, not just, oh, what if we lost? Which I think has been done a million times before. What if we didn't even fight would be a much better way of saying it. And then I can take some people. I mean, you look a bit young. You've got 4 or 5 year old kids. You're a bit younger than me. Dr. Mengele. I don't know if you have you heard of Dr. Mengele much?
No, I haven't actually.
You haven't? Oh, right. Well, if you're under 40 or 50, if you're over 40 or 50, you know who Dr. Mengele is because your parents and your grandparents would have told you about him. I was, you know, one of the worst people that's ever lived. Used to do experiments on people in Auschwitz. You know, there's a sort of documentary if you were maybe a year or two ago about.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, he had 7 dwarves. They were like these dwarves. They used to go around the Austro-Hungarian Empire doing stage shows and what have you. And well, they got picked up and they rolled up at Auschwitz. They got off the train. And one of them, the dad, I think, he was handing out business cards to the SS officers who were picking people who were going to get killed right now. And he handed out the business cards to them. I mean, that guy had some bravado. I was thinking of another word would be, but you know, bravado. this is a family show.
It is. Good choice, bravado. Yes. Perfect. Yes. Yeah.
They had some bravado. So they ended up living through this, but they got experimented on. I mean, there was, you know, one of them was still alive when this interview was made. She was living in Israel. And she was saying about how, you know, he was just pulling their teeth out one time, just to see. You know, so I thought, you know, this guy mustn't be forgotten. You know, he was just got to be one of the worst people ever. Not a bad looking fella. He had a lot of charm. And he had, you know, he wasn't just a doctor of medicine. He had a PhD in anthropology as well. Because a lot of these Germans have a lot of education.
Yeah.
And it's very common to have 2 PhDs or more PhDs. And you're called doctor. Yeah,
I know the character now, but I didn't link the name. But I definitely know the character and some of the horrors.
Oh yeah. You know, I mean, they're just too good to put away. And you know, these are people you don't even have to make them up. They were awful. You know, you could just pick out things that you want and put them in there, and you've got your bad guy ready made.
Yeah,
and you know, in the Gothengau colony also. It was almost a real thing. It was a thing called Master Plan East that the Germans had, the Nazis, to dominate Eastern Europe. There were going to be 3 colonies, 2 in the Baltic and 1 in Crimea in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I looked into this further, it was going to be an SS colony that was just for soldier farmers and to defend and feed the Reich. I thought, wow, I can't believe I've never heard of this before.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually were doing it. They were handed out parcels of land to SS officers before it started going the wrong way for them. It was only a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You don't really want to stop in Ukraine very long. They don't like it, and they'll be against you, and you'll be sorry. And that's what happened. So you know, one of these colonies, the Gothengau colony, did come about very briefly. So this is just an extrapolation of what if it actually did happen. And I always thought that the Nazis really took on far too many things. Do not fight Russia, Britain, and Russia and the British Empire and America at the same time. Don't do it at once. You're asking for trouble. You're not going to win this one. Yeah. So in this situation, they just take on. Well, it's a little like when Napoleon did this in the 19th century. Quick whip around Europe, knock over a few kingdoms and republics, get yourself a big army together and go east. But, you know, try not to get the winter on your heels, because that's going to be really, really tragic if you do. And obviously, Well, they forgot that part as well. So in the Gothic Cow Colony, it's just a bit of fun, a bit of action, excitement. And also, the other thing that I wanted to talk about with this was the German-Americans who were asked to come over. I mean, three of the characters in this, the Amish guy, Conrad, and Petra, the singer, and Karl, the second priest in the German religion, they are all Americans who were born there. German parents, German grandparents, and these people were brought over. You know that New York was the second biggest German-speaking city to Berlin.
Wow, I didn't know that. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that people don't know, people have forgotten about. There's not been used very much in fiction. Not very much or not at all. I mean, the other one that's not been used is the SS had a religion. And I went to this castle, Wevelsburg, which is prominently featured in the Gothengau Colony. Mm-hmm. And this is a triangular castle. And the SS, Heinrich Himmler, actually bought this with a 100-year lease. He didn't see the whole 100-year lease out. I don't think he got a refund. But he bought that for the SS as the spiritual center of the world where they would worship the Norse gods. And King Arthur would have come back with his knights and had a meeting at one of the floors of this castle. They had a room set aside for it.
Wow.
So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff there to go into. And, you know, I threw in a bit because, you know, in a story like the Gothengau Colony, you're going to have a lot of trouble putting women characters in it. So I thought, okay, the religion can have Vestal Virgins. Then we got three women characters in there. It was a lot of effort. It was a lot of effort to put an Amish in there as an SS commander. and three women. And two of them are also German-Americans. I think they're from Argentina, or one's from like the Volga in Russia. There's plenty of Germans live around there as well.
Yeah.
The other one is the daughter of Joseph Goebbels, the propaganda minister. I mean, he's not really mentioned. You know, there's quite a few big names in there, like Himmler and Reinhard Heydrich, who was like Himmler's second guy. He was a very, very nasty fella. He was killed in Prague by some agents that had been dropped in from London, some Czech guys had been dropped in from London. And they attacked his car. It was an open-top car. He turned around a slow corner and they attacked it, but their guns jammed. And they threw a grenade at him, but he still got out of the car and chased him down the street, shooting at them before he dropped. And he died a few weeks later. I mean, guy's not a very nice fella. He got thrown out of the German Navy early on in the 20th century because he went back on an engagement to a woman. And, you know, this guy is not a nice person. So he's also not strongly featured. The strongly featured people are the less famous ones, like Hannah Reich. She's a major character, and she actually fixed a problem they had with the V-1, the first flying bomb, the first cruise missile. She fixed a problem it had. They put a seat in it for her, and she flew it, and then they fixed the stalling problem. And then there's Wernher von Braun. He's a really major character as well. If it wasn't for Wernher von Braun, men wouldn't have walked on the moon. You know, it was all his idea, that Saturn V rocket.
Yeah,
that was his
design.
You know, there was an expression about him at the time, which was, if you aim for the moon, but if you can't hit the moon, London's good enough.
The historic knowledge, and is this always something you've had a passion about, or is it from the idea and the kind of the seed of writing the book that you've done all the research on this, or has this always been something that you've been interested in?
Well, I always knew quite a bit about it, but not as much as that. I've only ever met one person who has heard of Gothengau, and he's like a world-leading expert on the history of Germany, Professor Sir Richard Evans. It's quite well-known chap. And there's a lot there, because we've got the internet now, which is absolutely fantastic. It means all human knowledge is there. So you want to go in and have a look at something, you can find out all about it, and then you can make up some story. or do whatever you want with it, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're not hurting anyone, then there's no problem.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the
Gothengau Colony, is that its actual name then? Or is that what it was originally called?
It was called just called Gothengau. Although I've got books with I've got maps, sorry. And it's called Gotenland, or you know, it's some other variation on. It's basically called the County of the Goths. That's what they're calling it, and they've got a lot of renamed towns in Crimea. Sevastopol is not called that anymore. It's called Frederikstadt or something like that. Right. They've all got German names now, the places in the Crimea. And I've renamed a lot of places as well in the book because I thought it was a nice sort of hint at what had happened without going into too much explanation. You know, the thing that you can have in a story like the Gothengau Colony is that you have to do a lot of explanation first. But I wanted to go in straight to the action, get people in, and then explain what happened as you needed it to be explained. Yeah. So, you know, there's something said in one chapter and you think, oh, that's a bit of a, I'd like to know more, a bit more about that. And then the next chapter, it explains it. You know, you go back in time, whoosh, there's something that's happened, something exciting, and I've written that up, and that explains what was previously there. You know, it's like a, if you do it like maths, it's sort of like expanding out the brackets. I just expanded the brackets. And in a later bit, you know, it's a nice bit of shorthand here, later bit, whoop, there you go, it's all expanded there. So now you've got Conrad rescuing Petra from going on the train to Auschwitz, and she's being taken there by the guy who will later become the high priest of the German religion, Drachenblut, Felix Drachenblut, who's like, he's a big guy as well. He's not as big as Conrad, who is massive. He's 6'10", and he's, yeah, a bit like a brick outhouse.
Oh gosh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, he's 6'10". And the thing about that, I picked him to be 6'10", because if you were 2 meters tall or more in the Third Reich, they give you a medal and they give you a commission in the SS. And if you got a commission in the SS, well, they'll give you some farmland in Crimea right away, especially if you know what you're doing. Conrad did, he's a farmer. Just old school farmer, you know, with horses and what have you. So he's like the best farmer in Crimea. And he commands this other real thing, the 500th SS Paratroop Battalion. This was a real convict operation. So these, you know, it's a film that's going a little bit back now, but The Dirty Dozen, I think that's before even I was born. It's in the 60s or something like that. And it's about some troops that are taken out of jail and put in a special unit to do this particularly egregious and very likely to get you killed sort of task. So it's got elements of that in it. You know, so you've got your 500th, your criminals in this 500th. They might be in there for political reasons, they might be in there because they're punch-up artists or they're, you know, rapists or whatever.
Yeah.
But they're in there and this guy commands them and they are really faithful to Conrad, their leader, because they can see he's the honest guy and everybody else is just full of it.
Yeah. It's so immersive and so it's hard to put into words, actually, how the stuff from real history and how you've put it together, and it's fantastic. How long did it take to put it all together?
Oh, it took ages. It took me about 2 years to do the research before I even got to be able to think about what the story was, because I had to know all of the things in there. And the more I found out, the more things I had to put in there and keep on revising it and revising it. And there's lots of other smaller things that are in there. The ship that he goes on, they all go on the same ship from New York to Germany. And the MS St. Louis, real ship. This is a ship that there's a film called The Voyage of the Damned about this ship. It took on a lot of Jews from Antwerp and sailed out to America. And he sailed down the east coast of America. And they were refused entry everywhere. And they had to go back to Antwerp or Hamburg or something. And very few of those people were ever seen again. And the captain is the real captain of this boat. And the guy that he falls off the boat, the transport minister, was the real transport minister. And he died in 1946. Nobody really knows why. Mm. There's a lot of real people down to a very, very minute level of detail. But then there's also just people that are made up. And the principal characters are made up. and many others are made up, but many of them are real. And I should maybe even make an addition with that says who's real and who's not and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's just entertainment for the moment.
I mean, I'd love to see this as a film, you know. I bet it'd be amazing as a film.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's, you know, so there's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff needed now to fill up the TV and films that are being made. And I see there's a lot of stuff being made that's just being remade.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, what for? A lot of the stuff was good the first time around. Some of the stuff wasn't as good. You know, sometimes you get films the second time it's made that are better than the first ones. It's not very often that happens, maybe one time in 10. But I think there's a demand for new stuff like this. But getting it up to that sort of level, you know, I already put a ton of work in writing a novel about it, and now I'm putting another large amount of work in to get it publicised. I've got another one on the go, because it's going to be a series. It's just the first one. I mean, you might have noticed at the end, there's very open ending there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the next one starts with another exciting scene. Like this one, the Gothenburg colony starts with the helicopter attacking a Nazi missile raised to launch in a forest in Western Siberia. And then Conrad jumps out of the helicopter, runs around with his gun, runs around the launch vehicle, making sure everybody's been killed. But the last place he checks is the suicide launch switch. And there's a Soviet soldier, raggedy Soviet soldier there with his hand on the lever to launch it, laughing at him. But the gun jams, and that's it. Berlin is hit by a rocket a couple of chapters later.
Yeah.
So I want to get people in there. So I've got the same sort of thing in the second one. The opener is Prince Arthur, the Prince of Wales, is on a aircraft carrier in the Indian Ocean. And they're just testing the first nuclear explosion. So the bomb goes off, mushroom cloud goes up. When the mushroom cloud is at, you know, they get to 10,000 feet, 20,000 feet, something like that. When it's there, a space capsule punches through it, races towards the aircraft carrier before three massive parachutes come out behind it with massive swastikas on there. It lands on the deck of the aircraft carrier and scoots up to Prince Arthur. And somebody gets out. And they're about to take the hat off, and that's it. We cut, and it's further onto the story. It's like more in the background of the story after that. But in the first book, there's a lot of stuff about somebody's going to be the first in space, and you think it's going to be Max Hellfire, one of the main characters, the pop star character.
Yeah,
her husband, Max Hellfire, is a famous pilot. He broke the speed of sound barrier. He saved the SS in cyber in Stalingrad when they were battling there. Lots of things. He's a real big hero of the Reich. So he is being put forward as the first one who's going to go up there. But there are other people in the frame as well. Now, that's the opener of the next one, and it goes on from there. But I just want to make it exciting. And, I want to make it exciting and something that's kind of true-ish to life that'll make people think, oh, I should have a look at this. I should look this up. Because I've had that a lot when I've read books in the past that were based on reality. You know, I'd had to go out and look up. And I'd never really known about them before I read them in a novel. You know, a lot of stuff in Indian books, like books by Salman Rushdie, are based on real events. And you have to go and look into them to see what they are. Otherwise, you go away with a kind of misconception of what it was and just a vague idea that something had happened. But this will encourage people to go out and have a look at stuff, and maybe it'll encourage somebody even to think, oh, this is a great story. This would look good on the screen.
Perfect for tonight's show. Harry Styles, Late Night Talking. It's North Derbyshire Radio. Let's continue our Friday night chat with William Logan, author of the Gothenburg colony.
I'm wired like that in that if I see something that I don't know about, I have to research it.
Yeah.
So this is just an absolute goldmine for me. In fact, I was thinking, can we serialize this? Can we do a podcast or something? Can you come on every week?
Oh, yeah.
Just teach me about this stuff, because it's fantastic. Well,
I'm going to start doing a blog soon, and I've got a lot of photographs, because what works on social media, I believe, is that you got a photograph or a video and people all, you know, follow up with it more. So I've got a lot of photographs of principal characters together. So I've got one of Hannah Reich, the one who fixed the V1 problem, mm-hmm. sitting next to Wernher von Braun. And there were, it's like 1962, 1963 or something like that. Yeah. So this is like a really of the time photograph. So they are together, and I could have that as the intro, and then I'm going to write a blog about them and what they did. And then there is another picture. The two principal characters are also Dr. Mengele, who I've mentioned already.
Yeah.
And the other guy who you probably haven't heard of, Richard Beyer, who is like the Gauleiter of Gothengau. And people haven't really heard of this guy, but he was the commandant of Auschwitz. And there's a photograph of him and Dr. Mengele standing together in their uniforms, having a laugh at Auschwitz, because that's what you'd do.
Of course.
I mean, I'm sure you have a laugh at work, you know. but these guys, they took it serious. So I put these things on there. And then I can have a discussion of who they were and what this photograph means and all that type of thing. So I'd love to come on if you're doing a new podcast or anything like that. I can come on and talk about stuff. I have quite a lot of background knowledge. And, you know, if you give me headings up front, then I'll certainly have a look into them and come up with my own angle.
History, anyway, has always been a big thing for me. It's always been one of my favorite subjects. And, I've kind of touched on the war history a little bit, but not to an in-depth kind of knowledge. And just reading the Gothengau and then listening to you and your background knowledge, I just think, oh, this is just, it is just a gold mine. It's wonderful. I love learning about stuff like this.
Yeah. So it's all out there. I mean, it's all out there for anybody to find out. But if you've already found out, you can wrap it all together in a nice package and put it out there for people to just read or see. I mean, I suppose I could do a video blog, but I don't think I'd want to. No, he'd want to see me. And you could just listen to me or read me stories. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff out there in history. I mean, I sit there looking at things all the time or reading things or just, you know, that now you get presented with things based on who you know and what they like and what they've looked at. That's how social media presents things to
yes.
you.
It is.
Yeah, it makes it look as if they know you or what have you, but it's just maths. It's not really simple maths. This is maths that goes back a couple of hundred years to a guy in a town called Königsberg, which is now called Kaliningrad. It's the part of Russia that is close to Poland, but it's quite a long way from Russia. It's just like a little island of Russia. Mm. But it used to be a German town. And they didn't want it to be a German town anymore for some reason in 1945, so they kept it. They smashed the living daylights out of it. There's the four bridges of Königsberg problem that really is the basis of the maths that social media uses, so that they can think that, oh, you know this person and you may like this. As I don't know what your sort of hit rate is, but let's say one time out of five, it's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've used that same math to write the Gothengau colony, to bump up the characters, to expand on the plot from your basic, what's the plot? Well, there's a guy who goes to Nazi Germany and has to struggle to get a thing. Well, you need more than that, don't you? You need a lot more than that. So I put it through this math. I drew them out. Drew out who was in it, what's going to happen, how all of these things are related, and then I can get it all written out in order of how this happens in sequence. And it's pretty much easier to think of the bits in between those points after that. You just got to put the words in.
Yeah, what a process.
Yeah, it took a while. I mean, it's all self-developed. I've never really had any education in writing or anything like that. And I thought, oh, I've read loads of books. How hard can it be? Oh, it's pretty hard. You have to keep doing it again. Yeah. You did it wrong. Do it again.
Your background's computer science. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I've got a degree in computer science and I've done programming work. And it's just, It's programming. A computer is basically a machine that can add up two numbers and compare the results to zero. There's a lot more about it. I mean, you look at it and you think, oh, this is must be much more than it used to be 30 years ago, because look at all the pictures, all the videos and everything. No, it's still a load of ones and zeros and a machine that can add them up and check the result and whether it's zero itself. That's the long and short of computers. But if you do that enough times, you can show yourself a fancy video or a game that looks like a video. You can go a lot of places. Well, you can see in the past 30 years, that's what's happened.
On the socials actively, I must confess I've not actually done any searches for you on the social medias this last couple of weeks. I've been off and so busy and doing stuff. But are you on the social medias? How do you find it as well if you are?
Well, I'm on Twitter. At WF Logan Author. I'm on Twitter and, you know, I put out a few tweets a week and, I don't really look at it. I think it's a weird thing, social media. I mean, I'm a very friendly person. If I'm on the street, in the shops, what have you, I'll talk to people, have conversations with them. But it's different when you're not face to face, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really like the not face to face-ness of it all. And the I can't see you, so I'm not going to back down about anything angle of it.
Yeah. Especially Twitter as well. Twitter can be such a minefield for stuff like that.
I know. It's just like you just raise an eyebrow on Twitter and that's it. You've got hundreds of people down. It reminds me of playing rugby. Like, rugby's fine. It's a great game. Just run up and down that pitch. Run up and down that pitch. Do not ever touch the ball, because when you touch the ball, they can all kill you.
That's such a clever analogy. It's absolutely right as well. Oh, that's wonderful. I can't believe how fast the time's gone, and we've just chatted, and it's been so natural, and that's brilliant. So thank you for that. What a great little chat.
Oh, well, thanks very much for asking me on. And I can blab for hours.